Chapter 18. The Words He Knew. Priestess Mez Baris Armgo stared out to the west from the balcony of the family's sprawling compound, not counting the extra-dimensional spaces in some of the other powerful houses, Sor Lauren and Bayenri mostly. House Baris and Del Armgo was the largest compound in the city, and certainly greater than the house's ranking would suggest. For all that room, though, Mez Baris remained in the very same chair where she had watched the Armgo war parties depart. She stared longingly toward Narbondel now, its light diminishing to nothingness beyond the same boulevard where she had watched Utha Gentle move out of sight. It pained her to see him heading out there, with the dangerous Zachnefane Doerden in his sights, and with that incompetent fool Dabne beside him. How could her mother have sent him with her? Why not Mez Baris? True, Parsnalvi, the house wizard, was also flanking Utha Gentle, and with an enchanted item that had only one specific purpose, but still. Sometimes young and promising Mez Baris simply could not understand her mother. She didn't ponder that for long, though, as her thoughts kept going back to the image of Utha Gentle, the house weapon master. He was not an Armgo by birth. Mez Baris could only guess at his heritage, though she was confident that it was not wholly drow, certainly not. The man stood well over 6 feet tall, a height that few drow women could attain. He was stronger than the women, too, another anomaly among the drow, and was easily the strongest dark elf in the city. Even with magical assistance, other men could not match him, and even with Lolth-blessed spells of physical enhancement, other women couldn't either. And there was more to him than simple size and strength. As Mez Baris considered this, she shivered at the mere thought of him in his fine black armor and carrying that mighty black trident, armor in arm suitable for a weapon master of a noble house. Of House Bayenri, even, for that noble rank is where Matron Sulez expected Baris and Del Armgo to soon enough be. Utha Gentle, so fast, so strong, so invincible, would be a big part of that ascent, they all knew. There was something special about him, and surely the growing reputation of this Zachnefane Doerden paled against the reality of Utha Gentle. Utha Gentle was possessed of too much energy for his mortal body, and it seemed to Mez Baris that sparks of the stuff, the very energy of life, shot from him whenever he moved, little lightning pricks to tease and nip. For all his huge chest and shoulders and thick arms wound tightly with muscles, the man moved with the grace of a dancer, so very light on his feet. Yes, he was more than a mere man, more than a mere mortal. And Mez Baris was glad indeed that her mother had not taken him as her patron. Glad and shocked, for Matron Sulez had demanded that none in House Armgo ride the man except for Mez Baris. Oh, indeed, she sometimes rented him out for breeding services, as she had with Matron Malice Doerden to produce the Breeza creature. But that didn't bother Mez Baris. She could not feel envy toward those who paid for the magnificent specimen with coin. Mez Baris took all of that in stride, as well as the teasing she endured from the other priestesses, both here and out in the city. "How can you be with a man who is stronger than you?" most women asked, seeming sincerely aghast at the thought. "It isn't natural. Are you sure that you don't simply prefer the bed company of women?" Mez Baris was sure. Yes, it was unusual, almost unheard of, for a drow woman to be attracted to a man so physically superior to her. But Mez Baris couldn't deny the thrill she felt when Utha Gentle so easily tossed her up upon his hips, holding her aloft while he took her, never tiring. He threw her about as if she were a child, but he knew how to throw her indeed. She would take their barbs and simply smile and never let them all know the power of her lover and the thrill he could give to her beyond anything any of them, she was sure, had ever known. Before Arathis Yoon put on a mask of rage, Zachnefane thought he saw a flicker of surprise. The two fell into a fighting rhythm, blades clanging, each quick-stepping sidelong to take a good look at the battleground to seek advantage.
"They will coax you unexpectedly, and when you are there, you will find an enemy where you expected a friend.
Zacnaphane yelled at him, rolling his left hand in and over to send his sword down hard to block the thrust of Arathisune's. His opponent leaped back as if expecting a counter, but it did not come. Perhaps that explained the curious look on Arathisune's face, Zacnaphane thought, but perhaps not. And so he repeated, "They will coax you unexpectedly, and when you are there you will find an enemy where you expected a friend." "Stay alive, my only friend," Arathisune replied, his red eyes sparkling with recognition. Zacnaphane nodded, and together the men answered, "I need you to stay alive." So they knew. Movement to the side had the combatants suddenly charging at each other, then stopping fast and going past very near. They hooked arms, the momentum spinning them sidelong, where Zacnaphane leaped out for the right-hand side of the alley, bracing and vaulting into a somersault that landed him on both his feet, squared up to a secret door that suddenly opened before him. Zacnaphane heard the telltale clicks and spun sidelong, throwing his cloak out wide before him to catch the flying quarrels. He managed to glance over his shoulder to see Arathisune similarly dodging against a different concealed door directly opposite the one that had opened before Zacnaphane, and from it came a handful of drow warriors. From both, Zacnaphane saw, looking back to his own portal. But no. Zacnaphane paused, mouth hanging open, for the group charging him simply disappeared, vanished, as if they had been no more than an illusion. He spun again, thinking to go to his now companion, but saw a third door opening, this one from the building at the end of the alley, and out charged another handful. Or was it the same one? He couldn't be certain. But then those attackers too were gone, simply vanished, and farther on, Arathisune too was suddenly standing alone. "Be done with this puny Doerden and come back to me," Mes Baris whispered to the knight. The priestess squirmed uncomfortably and shook her head, still surprised that her mother, Matron Sulez, had allowed Utha Gentle to be involved with this mission. True, it should not be more dangerous. Indeed, not even nearly as dangerous as many of the other battles House Barriss and Delarmgo had waged of late, with overwhelming odds in their favor this night. But there was a different play here, Mes Baris knew. This fight involved Zacnaphane Doerden, a man Utha Gentle had been watching and planning to battle for more than a century, since the time when Zacnaphane had been the only notable member of a minor house named Simfrey. Mes Baris understood her lover well. If he had a weakness, it was pride. There was no way he would stand behind the others of his war party and allow Zacnaphane to be killed, no chance even that he would allow others to engage the weapon master of House Doerden beside him. This was a kill Utha Gentle craved, and with witnesses that the word could go out far and wide of his singular and glorious victory. With Zacnaphane properly dispatched, only Dan Tragbeanry himself would stand between Utha Gentle and his desire to be named as the uncontested champion of Menzo Berenzon. "Be done with this puny Doerden and come back to me," she whispered again. And almost as if in answer, a drow warrior appeared, then another, a third, fourth, and fifth, materializing in mid-stride at the front of the Armgo compound. She tensed, worried they were under attack as two fell prone, hand crossbows presented, while the other three moved with perfect precision to follow those shots into battle. Just as these skilled warriors had been trained at House Barriss and Delarmgo. The five skidded to a communal stop, all glancing about in confusion, which mirrored her own. Out of her chair now, Mes Baris recognized them, warriors of her own house, one of the three supporting strike teams that had gone out with Utha Gentle's group of seven. "What is it?" a voice asked behind her, and she glanced back to see the priestess Almwheel, her cousin. "What?" she asked back. "You gasped loudly," Almwheel replied. Mes Baris pointed over the balcony to the strike team, who were all up now and moving back into the compound, shaking their heads. "Something is amiss." "One of the war parties has returned?" Almwheel asked incredulously, but she quickly shook off any concern. "It is still 17 against 2, Mes Baris said to calm herself. Almwil wagged her finger and shook her head, correcting Mez Barris with 18 against 1. Mez Barris started to agree, but stopped when, out of the corner of her eye, she saw a second Armgo war party appear, again as if they were charging into battle and had taken a wrong dimensional turn. Then a third party joined the other two, 15 Armgo warriors now, all confused, all out of the battle. Mez Barris leaned over the rail, peering all about for the fourth team, Uthagentil's team. 8 against 1, she whispered to herself, trying to calm her very real and growing fears. It didn't sound quite as good to her.
A ruse!
Zaknafane cried as he completed his turn, to see a handful of warriors charging down the alley. Zaknafane surely recognized one in particular, a giant of a drow with spiked white hair and golden pins stuck through his cheeks. Yes, he knew of Uthagentil. Everyone in Menzo Baranzon knew of the beastly weapon master of House Barris and Delarmgo, and that clarified all of this to him. For Dabne had played a role in this, he believed, or she had used her connections with House Barris and Delarmgo to warn both him and Arathis Yun. But why? How did it make sense that she had warned them both in such a manner that might have them killing each other before the ambush had even begun? He didn't have time to sort any of it out, for in came four warriors with Uthagentil hanging back. Two charged right in at Zaknafane and Arathis Yun, the other two flanking left and right to box in the intended victims. Zaknafane and Arathis Yun turned back to back. They had practiced this technique many times, as had all of Jarlaxle's band, any enmity between the two forgotten, for the moment at least. Zaknafane's turn had him intercepting the back two, the ones who had flanked, for with his two long blades he was better able to parry against enemies coming in from either side. He heard the clash of metal behind him before he blocked, Arathis Yun working his sword and dagger to halt the charge of the middle pair. Out went the weapon master's sword to the right, out went his left-hand blade, and he followed that parry with a quick step and turn, nudging Arathis Yun as he went, signaling the man. Arathis Yun too went left, the pair circling, and so the warrior chasing Zaknafane from his right side had to halt and scramble to get his blades in line to meet the new foe. Similarly, the Armgo warrior pressing Arathis Yun from his right side now got a face full of Zaknafane, the weapon master first thrusting long to push his initial attacker back, then coming in with fury on the new opponent. Zaknafane worked his blades hard, down-angling the stabs to force the man further off balance. He almost had him, but had to relent and quarter-spin back the other way to engage the charge of his initial opponent. Round and round went the pair, building a rhythm, coming almost all the way back to their original back-to-back position. Almost, but not quite, for there they suddenly reversed, and this time, Zaknafane's abrupt shift caught that original opponent clearly off guard, and the weapon master was sure he had a clear hit. But he heard a stumble behind him and a cry from Arathis Yun, and had to cut short his attack to help his ally. Zaknafane lifted an enemy blade just in time for the tumbling Bragandyearth assassin to go rolling out of the melee. Arathis Yun came right back to his feet, blades at the ready, but none of the four attackers had pursued. Zaknafane recognized it first and fast, and a good thing that was. He put his legs underneath him and leaped straight up into the air, way up high, tucking his legs to avoid two stabs and a vicious slash. Up above the blades of his three immediate enemies, the fourth still falling away from Zaknafane's reversal. Zaknafane kicked out left and right. One of his targets got his sword up fast, cutting a gash in Zaknafane's shin, but the weapon master accepted the sting gladly, for both of his boots found their marks, kicking each of the two in the face. One went flying away straight to the ground, where his head cracked loudly on the alleyway stone, blood flowing immediately. The other staggered back, dazed, his sword wet with Zaknafane's blood, but his nose pouring his own. The third of the group stood alone against Zaknafane, his friend fast returning, but not fast enough. Zaknafane feigned to the right, the obvious move with another enemy closing so fast from the left, but with stunning courage, the confident Zaknafane went left instead, his blades working furiously, batting aside his surprised enemy's thrusts and stabs, working over and down in a sudden and brutal frenzy. He got the man in the chest, a deep stab just as the other, his initial opponent, came in at his back. Without missing a movement, Zacnafane let go of his blades, caught them in backhand grips, and began stabbing them out behind him in rapid and brutal succession. The poor enemy behind him had never seen such a technique or such fury, and had to parry and dodge as surely as if the weapon master had been facing him. So strong was Acnaphane's grip, so sure and quick and balanced his reverse stabs, that no parry could move the blades far enough to one side or the other to slow his rhythm. And finally, inevitably, the Armgo Drow missed a parry and caught the sword tip in the gut. Zacnafane whirled about, the bloody-nosed fellow coming in fast to join his gut-stabbed companion. Before he ever got there, though, the Armgo Drow found himself alone as Zacnafane worked his right-hand blade over and down, taking the cringing and wounded Drow's swords low with it. Over that descending blade went Zacnafane's right hand, the weapon master stepping forward and putting all of his weight behind a heavy pommel punch to the face. Three down. Zacnafane leaped ahead and dove into a roll, coming around as he did to return to his feet facing his last opponent. As he rose, he noted Arathisune engaged with Uthagentil, the assassin twisted and low, pulling the front of that mighty black trident down with him. So Uthagentil hit him across the face with the butt end of the weapon. It didn't seem so solid a blow to Zacnafane, but Arathisune went flying back into the ground. He tried to rise, staggered, then simply fell over. Zacnafane focused on the drow nearest, not wanting to battle this one and that powerful weapon master together. The Armgo warrior fell back, though, blood still dripping from his nose, wanting nothing to do with Zacnafane. As he moved toward the alleyway exit, Zacnafane noted two more enemies and realized that he was doomed. He should have focused on the man standing there, he realized, but he could not, for he knew the other. Dabne Trayrach. She had indeed betrayed him. He'd deal with her later, he thought, but winced as he did, for not only was Uthagentil Armgo now closing on him, but another Armgo warrior might get back up to join in, and worse still, the man standing beside Dabne was certainly a wizard, given his decorated robes, and almost certainly a high-ranking wizard in a house known to have powerful arcane spellcasters. Zacnafane hated priestesses of Lolth above all, but loved to fight them. He hated fighting wizards. Wizards cheated. They could melt him or shock him to death or freeze him or send him to some far-off horrid plane before he ever got close enough to strike. Even worse, now he couldn't go after that one, accepting and hopefully avoiding a single spell before closing to melee range. No, Zacnafane had a bigger problem in the form of the biggest drow he had ever seen. Uthagentil's approach surprised Zacnafane, for it was not bullish. He came at Zacnafane in measured steps, that huge trident handled like a short spear in his right hand, left hand out wide to complete the balance of his crouched stance. It didn't take Zacnafane long to understand why the powerful drow kept that second hand free, for Uthagentil put the trident through a series of spins and handoffs, back and forth, the long weapon rotating in a blur before him, creating a wall of defense. In the few heartbeats it took Zacnafane to figure out the unorthodox maneuver, the big man almost got him, stopping the blur suddenly and in perfect alignment to thrust that three-tined weapon fast for Zacnafane's center torso. Zacnafane had no time to dodge to either side, couldn't back up fast enough to escape the extended reach of the weapon, and simply wasn't strong enough to block the trident cold. The veteran weapon master, ever a student of the arts martial, understood all of that without thinking it. His muscles understood it, every bit of him understood it. His swords, weapons stolen from the armory of Uthagentil's own house, came up vertically before him, perfectly aligned to take the trident between the tines. And as the immensely strong Uthagentil drove through the block, Zacnafane kept his feet planted but fell back, bending at the knees. Down, down he went, so low that his shoulder blades nearly touched the ground. Uthagentil retracted, obviously to re-angle the trident downward at the low-bending weapon master. But before he could even do that, Zacnafane came back up a short way, then stopped abruptly, and with perfect muscle control, transferred his momentum fully into his legs, leaping out backward, backflipping to land on his feet. and angled forward, he came right back in with blinding speed, leaping up and stomping down on the trident to drive it lower, his left foot lifting and kicking out ahead to slam Utha Gentle in the face. The bulky Armgo weapon master staggered back a step, but shook it away, seeming more surprised than hurt. And with fantastic agility and speed, Utha Gentle got his trident up in time to fend off Zacnaphane's ensuing sword barrage. But Zacnaphane had the advantage now and pressed ferociously. On his heels, Utha Gentle cut a powerful two-hand parry, then left the trident in his right hand, his left going to his belt and producing a net. Zacnaphane had heard about this second weapon, a net magically strengthened and enchanted to attack its target on its own. Utha Gentle swept his left hand across, and Zacnaphane could sense the net as if it were a sentient animal biting at him. But he didn't relent. He couldn't relent. On he pressed, swords banging against that trident in rapid succession, Zacnaphane pushing ahead. Again Utha Gentle swept the net across, this time letting it fly. Zacnaphane hit it a dozen times, his blades angling perfectly to stop the magical item from widening to grasp at him. The net flew past harmlessly, and Zacnaphane went right back in at the hulking drow, furiously striking, stabbing, slashing, anything to keep Utha Gentle back on his heels. He didn't know if he could finish Utha Gentle then, but he certainly had stolen the advantage. But then he missed. Utha Gentle cleverly dipping his trident, then coming back in behind Zacnaphane's left-hand slash across to stab hard. Zacnaphane's right-hand sword swept in to deflect as he spun desperately, dropping his left foot back and circling backward right around, and again, his balance perfect, he regained the upper hand. "Enough!" he heard from the alleyway, from the wizard. Expecting a devastating spell, Zacnaphane went tumbling away defensively, throwing his magical Powafwi cloak about him as a shield. But the wizard wasn't casting a lightning bolt or missiles of magical energy, and wasn't aiming at Zacnaphane anyway. He held a small rod out before him horizontally in both hands, then simply snapped it in half, releasing the encapsulated Dwyamer. Utha Gentle roared in protest, but his voice warped as his physical form wavered, flapping like laundry in a strong wind. The wizard likewise distorted and twisted like some empty fabric, and both were gone, poof, leaving Zacnaphane, four wounded Armgo soldiers, Arathis Yun, who was still inexplicably face down on the ground, and a shocked and clearly terrified Dabne standing in the alleyway's open exit. The priestess shook her head slowly, staring at him, mouthing something he could not hear. But Zacnaphane was confident that she was not trying to cast a spell. Her shoulders trembled slightly, perhaps from sobs.
"Well, we won and you are deserted," Zacnaphane said to her, flipping his bloodied swords, deftly rubbing them across the clothes of the nearest body to clean them, then returning them skillfully to their sheaths. He glanced to the side to see a wounded Armgo warrior crawling for one of the alleyway's exits. "Did you really believe that you could succeed at this, priestess?"
"Yes, Dabne the Unthinking," Arathis Yun chimed in. Zacnaphane hid his smile, but he was not surprised. "Did you expect a different outcome? Do you think Jarlaxle would elevate fools to his side? We knew. Of course we knew, and if you ever hoped to ascend in Bregan D'Earth, you should have anticipated that Zacnaphane and I would be three steps ahead of your deceptions." "First," he continued, "I knew that you have been betting Zacnaphane for a long time, but for your own gain. Second, that gain is a product of elimination. Both of us out of your way, and how convenient that Jarlaxle is not around. For with him near, we could not engage, of course. And where is Jarlaxle this night?" Dabne's gaze never left Zacnaphane, her stare locking his and holding it fast. "Third," Arathis went on, quite confidently it seemed, "you have been courting the favor of the particularly vicious Solez Armgo. What gain might Dabne find by eliminating one of us when eliminating both would put her by Jarlaxle's side in Bregan D'Earth? Jarlaxle, who is, by the way, out of the city on business with the Armgos, of course." Zacnaphane saw a slight shake of Dabne's head, but it was clear that the woman was defeated here, wholly so, emotionally so. She didn't even have the heart to argue, it seemed to the perceptive Zachnophane. 3 steps ahead, Arathisune reiterated lightly, tauntingly, and now your intended victim will put the blade to you. Zachnophane noted a flare of sudden confusion in Dabney's red eyes. He wasn't surprised by it. Her overriding feeling was guilt, not fear. Dabney fully expected that she was about to die. Her feeble repertoire of spells couldn't begin to protect her from either of these skilled killers, let alone both. Strangely, though, she almost welcomed that. All of this had churned at her for so long, tearing her apart inside. She didn't want Zachnophane dead. She didn't even want Arathisune killed, but her situation had been wholly untenable. So she had chosen the only choice she could make, she had believed. But she had chosen wrong, and so now would pay. She noted Arathisune rising farther down the alley, behind Zachnophane. She noted the stealthy approach of the man and thought it curious. Then more curious still when he angled not for her, but for Zachnophane's back, his dagger bared and in hand. And Zachnophane was staring at her.
6 steps, the weaponmaster corrected Arathisune. And Dabney gasped aloud at the speed of Zachnophane's arms coming up, swords with them and backhand grips. At first she thought he had tossed the left-hand blade spinning, but then realized that he was simply flipping it over in his grasp as it went, up and over his left shoulder, even as his right-hand sword stabbed out hard behind him. She saw Arathisune dodge slightly, but still come in for Zachnophane's back. But that left-hand sword of the weapon master, somehow he had brought it over, turned it over, and now swept it across behind him to intercept the assassin's dagger. Dabney could hardly keep up with Zachnophane's movements, his sword coming back up over his right shoulder, high over his head and around, even as he began his leftward turn. She expected that high blade to come sweeping all the way around. Arathisune did too, she realized from his movement, but no. Instead, Zachnophane flipped it again as it passed before him and expertly turned it to stab straight out behind him with a backhand grip, as his other blade had done earlier. And he was still turning, and now it was his right-hand blade that went up, then came slashing down as he completed the move. The brilliant move, a move that should have been 2 extensions too long, but had been executed so perfectly, so swiftly, that even the uncommonly skilled victim appeared mesmerized. Arathisune did manage to throw himself back to his right and down, saving himself from decapitation. But he staggered, for the blade had hit, and he clutched at the side of his neck where a fountain of blood had already begun to spurt. 6 steps ahead, not 3, Zachnophane said again. You forgot to mention the first of them, that it was Arathisune who used the Oblodron mind magic in an attempt to allow Duvon Trayrock to defeat and kill me. Jarlaxle's actions in giving me his eye patch showed me the truth of that treachery. 5th, this last planned assassination that you would have me believe was the act of Dabney alone. The weapon master laughed as if the very notion was absurd. You knew of Dabney's efforts with the Armgos because she is not the only member of Bregan de Earth who has recently parlayed with them. For why would they wish Arathisune dead? What gain to them? And if you knew, as you just said, that it was they, the Armgos, who had arranged for Jarlaxle to be out of town, then you knew Jarlaxle was away, so why did you come here? And finally, you betrayed yourself in this beyond doubt, assassin. In our fight with the foursome, for Arathisune does not stumble. Arathisune stared at him, eyes wide. He slumped down to one knee, then had to put his free hand to the ground for further support. For as tightly as he might hold the wound, he could not fully stem the spurting blood. Dabney could save him. She slid her thumbs across her fingers anxiously as she considered a spell of healing. But still she stared at Zachnophane, trying to take some measure of the man. She began to cast her spell, but stopped as Zachnophane approached, blade leveled at her throat. She expected to die.
Webs over webs over webs, he said, bringing the sword tip to the tender flesh of her throat. Daphne swallowed hard. Back behind Zacnaphane, Arethusune slumped to the ground, the blood pooling. Zacnaphane retracted his sword and spun it over, sliding it and its partner blade into their respective sheaths once more.
"I cannot pay the price of your head," he said. "Jarlaxle will sell you to the Armgos. He is likely doing so even now in his current dealings with Matron Sulez. I wonder if she will buy you, only to blame you for her losses this night."
"Then kill me," she whispered.
Zacnaphane started to reply, but stopped and simply shook his head, his expression empty.
"I am sorry," she whispered, the words barely audible. "I have not your courage."
She noted Zacnaphane's wince, but couldn't begin to decipher it. The weapon master ran past her, down the alleyway and out into the Menzo Barrens on night. Daphne took a deep and steadying breath, then rubbed her fingers, thinking to heal Arethusune. Too late.